Kevin Walsh, the Kevin Walsh Show, Sports Grid Podcast, back for a big one. Off the top, we are definitely getting into the college football card. We got a couple of big games, monster 3:30 window. We'll talk a little NFL this weekend. We're going to do some quick hits again off the top, like we did in our most recent episode. I appreciate all of you bearing with me. Only one episode last week, only one this week. I do want to get you these multiple times a week. I think maybe allowed myself a little thrown off with a vacation. Went to Tampa Bay with the missus, Eagles Bucks. It was a great time. Eagles got the win. I know she was hoping Tampa would win, but I think she's doing pretty good right now with the new Taylor album. So life is good on that front. We had the Taylor screen mirrored. Listened the whole way through, pretty much starting right at midnight. It was a good time. Good album. Enjoyed it. Canceled stood out as a good song. If anybody, for some reason, wanted my 2 cents on that. Let's start with quick hits here. We're going to do Thursday Night Football, quick WNBA Finals thoughts, and then the Major League Baseball DSs are all set up. So Thursday Night Football, and we'll be here the longest. The Thursday night game is one of the most important results of the season. The San Francisco 49ers enter as over touchdown underdogs due to all the injuries mounting between Purdy and Jennings and Pearsall, the withstanding injuries you knew about in Kittle and Bosa and Ayuk, and it shifted the line up to where I thought the Niners were the side, but I was still considering using the Rams in Survivor. I ultimately didn't do that, but I didn't really see a pathway here for San Francisco to win this game. And as they jump out, of course, to a 14-0 lead, it goes from, I didn't think they had much of a chance to win it outright, despite being on them plus the points, to how could they possibly lose? And they had moments where, you know, conservative approach was maybe going to burn them. I didn't like that they kicked a field goal to go up 20-17. But a blocked extra point because the Rams have the all-time great kicker when it comes to kickoffs now, seemingly, and a disaster when it comes to not getting his kicks blocked. That game stayed tied at 20 apiece. It ends up going to overtime, and the Niners get one of the biggest wins of the season. Why is it such a big win? Because the San Francisco 49ers now should be home free as it pertains to making the playoffs. For the Rams, it's more devastation, and it brings more questions about will you actually be able to beat the best in the league? That is a question the Rams are staring down. But my thought after the Niners got that game, a team that I bet to win the NFC, I had some futures lined up in awards-wise, Robert Saleh, Assistant Coach of the Year, stock up coming off of that game. My thought was, wow, the Niners now missing the playoffs feels impossible. Books agree. There are only two teams with longer odds to make the playoffs, and that is Buffalo and Philly, the two 4-0 teams in the league. That is how big of a win that was for San Francisco, because despite there was so much talk about an easy schedule for the Niners, it's not been that easy to start the year. They've played three divisional games, and we know the NFC West is good. They're 3-0 in those games. A loss to Jacksonville, a win on the road against the Saints. You look at what remains, and there are only two games the rest of the way out of the 12 where they play a non-division game against a team currently above 500. That's at Tampa, and it's at Indianapolis. This team still plays Carolina. This team still plays and hosts Atlanta, Chicago, Tennessee, goes to Cleveland, goes to the Giants, and there can be upsets within there. There can be. But for the Niners, so injured early season, I know it's a fool's errand to think, oh, they'll be healthy, you know, come X, you know, come week 14, 15, but this team really should be healthier later than they are now. It's hard to imagine they'll be less healthy, right? It's an 11.5 win total. One seed's on the board, minus money favorite to win the division. The 49ers upset has now given them a clean runway here to feel like a certainty for postseason football, and that makes them intriguing. If you didn't believe in this group before the season, I get it, to each his own. Clearly, I did. But the numbers that I bet before the year, you're somehow still getting. The books are adjusting their playoff number, right? The books are adjusting their win total. But you go into the conference, and I'm just pulling up FD odds in front of me. Maybe you can get better elsewhere. Maybe this is the top of the market. But it's plus 850 on the Niners. Lions, Packers, Eagles all in front. And I don't mind the Lions, Packers, Eagles all being in front of them. But that gap may be a little far, considering San Francisco having the second best odds in the conference to make the playoffs. Right? Because of San Francisco being able to look at their division now and go, we've beaten every single one of your teams. We're 3-0 with a win on each of your heads. And two of them on the road, by the way. One at Seattle, a win at LA. So you can get some interesting numbers on the Niners. This could be a spot as, you know, you adjust to the futures market. I may just be playing a little extra Niners here, a couple of free bets. If no sweats don't come in, I may get to the Niners a few more times in the NFC. A monster win on a Thursday night. But quick little thing. Quarterback controversy, probably not because Purdy was paid. But yes, the Mac Jones performances are enough to say they shouldn't have paid Brock Purdy and repurposed that money elsewhere. And that was easy to see before they made the decision. As someone who has occasionally been complimentary of Brock Purdy, in trusting Kyle Shanahan's ability to get a lot out of the quarterback position, the Niners have put themselves in a less advantageous position than they could have had they stayed cheap at quarterback and funneled the money elsewhere into this roster. Instead, they're paying Brock Purdy to be a franchise quarterback. And right now, Brock Purdy has a long way to climb to be putting up better numbers than Mac Jones is in the three games that he's actually had to be the quarterback for this team. Let's do a little WNBA here. If you are someone who's been listening to this podcast from the beginning, one of the very first episodes was actually a WNBA season preview, went through futures, and the main look was the Vegas Aces to win the WNBA championship. And it was a long, winding road to get here, but you cannot do better than in the WNBA Finals and favor to win it. And that's exactly what the Vegas Aces are. I think they will get the job done. They've somewhat owned Phoenix this year. They've played four times. Aja missed one game. Phoenix won that. The other three, the Aces won all three of them. Two of those on the road and a dominant home victory. This is a set-the-tempo game for Vegas on Friday night. Maybe the game's already happened if you're listening to this before the Saturday slates or even maybe a Sunday listener. I expect Vegas to get the job done. If this is out quick enough, I'm playing a first quarter under in game one, 41.5 at minus 110. I think that's a nice piece of business there. All four meetings fail to see more than 40 points scored between these two teams. Finals, you know, slow pace, deep breath, a lot of intensity right out of the gate there. I'm going to play an early under in Aces Mercury. I think Vegas gets the job done. No hedge for me into game one. I will continue to look and see if there's a moment where I think I need to play some Phoenix, but right now, no hedge, trusting the Aces to get the job done in the WNBA Finals. Major League Baseball, we've got the DSs now set. Blue Jays, Yankees, Mariners, Tigers in the AL, Cubs, Brewers, and then the Phillies and the Dodgers in the National League. It has been really interesting to watch the market react to the Dodgers-Phillies series. The Phils entered the playoffs as World Series favorites, and before they play their first game, they've been jumped by multiple teams, Yankees and Dodgers. Spoke with friend of the program here, Sam Yarnell, about just the movement, and I'm planning on getting Sam and Joe back sometime next week, which I think will be really good for everybody. We'll go through a lot of stuff. But he mentioned, like, maybe the books are aggressively fading the off-buy teams. I mean, there's something to it. It's on the board, right? I don't think it's crazy to see the Yankees and the Dodgers jump the Philadelphia Phillies. Now, some of that is preseason pedigree. Some of that is being impressed by their performances, right? You know, Yanks rotation, hard to ask for better than what Freed, Rodon, and Schlittler gave you against Boston. Dodgers just absolutely steamrolled the Cincinnati Reds. But neither one of those series was I really expecting the team who's favored to be favored. I wasn't expecting the Dodgers to jump in front of the Phillies due to home field advantage, and I wasn't expecting the Yankees to jump in front of the Blue Jays due to home field advantage. I think there's a big conversation to be had if we somewhat confirm the bye is a problem, the bye is being faded, and there are two other series that, like, ultimately, if the Mariners and the Brewers win, let's just say it goes chalk, right? Yanks, Mariners, Brewers, Dodgers, which is good booking, right? Four favorites win, two teams off bye win, two teams off bye lose. Like, it's much to do about nothing, but last year was the first time we saw a World Series where it was a team who had received a bye against a team who received a bye. Thinking about the Yankees and the Dodgers. If those two teams make it back, I don't know, I'll say, oh, it proves the bye is bad if it's those two teams who make it back. If the World Series ends up like Dodgers-Tigers, though, that'll feel weird to me. That'll feel weird. For anybody who hasn't seen it across Twitter, across different sports grid shows, I did bet the AL East to win the World Series at plus 310 before everything started. That price is now, I'm seeing plus 230. Maybe you can do a little bit better elsewhere. It's down and it should be. Now, the selling point on that bet is I will be in the ALCS. The argument against it is at best, right? Like, right, where I should, like, that is the best I can do. Would it have been more tempting if we had Toronto, Detroit, and Seattle, New York, right? And maybe yes, and maybe it would have been a shorter number, but I still feel very confident that I will pick either the Blue Jays or the Yankees in a series in the next round against the Mariners or the Tigers. If you were to ask me in this moment, you know, knowledge plus vibes, predictions, I would say the Phillies, Brewers, Tigers, Yankees. That's where I'm at. That's, you know, it's two dogs, two favorites, two buy, no buy. That's where I'm at right now. Let's see if it's Kevin is completely right. What would that parlay be? 14, almost 15 to 1. Yanks, Tigers, Phillies, Brewers. I'm tempted to bet Philly. I'm a little tempted to bet Milwaukee. I feel like I'm already invested in the Yankees piece of it. I'm tempted to bet Detroit, so I may end up playing those three teams before Saturday. But those are going to be really fun games to bet. I know everyone's going to be doing it. I'll add this as well, just quick, and then we'll get to the college football card. Won't keep you here too long on a Friday. Do a couple quick hits. One of the best things that happened with the Yankees advancing past Boston is now we get to really see Aaron Judge in the postseason spotlight this year. We've seen it before. It's been bad. Aaron Judge in the three games against the Red Sox goes 4-for-11 with an RBI. The numbers look good, but it was four singles. Not very Judge-esque, right? Hard to complain about a .364 batting average and a .417 on base. But, you know, he's not slugging. He's not giving you anything above that. He's just, you know, making good contact. Only the one RBI. Went 0-for-3 in the final win. Was hit by a pitch with runners on. It felt like that was a good moment for him to do some damage. It happens. But for Judge, for the Yankees, if this is the year that Judge is going to get it done, and that doesn't mean win the World Series. These will go hand in hand, but it's not. If this is the postseason that Aaron Judge leaves batting over 300 with multiple home runs and big RBI performances, right? I think there's an argument that everything's set up perfectly against Boston. Kept the contact about him. Ultimately, again, you're hitting above 350 through three, but there's still, we're still waiting for the power. He should be bringing that to Toronto. He 100% should have multiple home runs in this series against the Blue Jays. Multiple big hits. That's what I would expect here. It's what I am expecting. But the beauty of the Yankees advancing is we get to find out. And I am really, really excited to find out. Let's get into this college football card, man. No reason for a break. Really excited for what is a delightful 3:30 window. We're kind of flooded here, right? Like, if you look at the biggest games this week, you know, I do the big game best bets every week. These are games we got to be involved in because you're going to be involved in. You got two of them in Texas, Florida, Alabama, Vanderbilt. I only picked three. If you made me go to a fourth, it might be Notre Dame, Boise State, also at 3:30. Listen, you add in Penn State off that loss is playing UCLA, unranked Louisville laying almost 7 to Virginia. You got some good games in that 3:30 window. Late night, you have Florida State, Miami. Let's start with Texas and Florida because the other two games are going to work in unison. I am doing something I've not done yet this year with those games. I think people will like it, though. I do. Okay, let's start with Florida, Texas. So, the bigger the game, right, the more comfortable I can be in what I expect the spread to be, the more accurate I can be in what I expect that spread to be. As the college season goes on, we get more and more information. I say that because in the NFL, that's, you know, it's a lot of how the process begins in betting sides in the NFL, right? In college, occasionally it might be see the numbers settle in type of situation. My point is, I thought Texas would be a 7.5-point favorite against Florida. And I am almost positive that is where that number started. It certainly at one point was a 7. 100% it was a 7. And when I saw the 7, I was like, wow, I kind of like Texas here, right? And then it went to 6.5. And I went, whoa, I really like Texas here. All gone. Down to 5.5. This was 4.5. At time of recording, this was 4.5 a couple of hours ago. So around noon Friday, this was around 4.5, okay? And I laid it with Texas at 4.5, certainly would at 5.5, and would again at 6.5. I am trying to, you know, I'm obviously, at 7 I understood. I was like, maybe I'll lay it with Texas. I'm not sure. But I understand people being like, let me go again on Florida, okay? And I understand we're laying laying points in a lower scoring projected game. Total sitting around 42.5. But when we look at Florida and that offense, an offense that I had high expectations for, because I thought DJ Lagway was going to be really, really good this year. You know, in the college football fantasy best ball leagues I entered, I think I left with DJ Lagway in all of them. A Florida offense that could not finish with touchdowns against USF, turned it over time and time and time again against LSU, and only mustered up 7 points with 61 passing yards against Miami, now plays the best defense they've seen so far. A lot of conversation is going to be about Arch. We'll talk about Arch in a second. Does anybody think Texas's defense is not, at minimum, as good as Miami, LSU, or South Florida? Of course not. Texas right now, I understand opponents, but Ohio State is in there, is the number one team in college football opponent yards per play allowed. This defense is great. It entered the season predicted it to be great. I believed it would be great. It's why I bet Texas week one against Ohio State. And that part of the cap, I feel fine with. I felt fine with watching the game. I felt fine with when it was over. And I still believe in that Texas defense to the point that Texas is a team I've almost at time, I continually check in, right? are the books going to give up on them the way seemingly many of others have given up on them? And the answer to that is no, because Texas usually pretty much consistently sits in with like top five odds to win a national championship. So I don't think anybody here is banking on Lagway and Florida coming out of the gate, firing on all cylinders. Can they be better? Sure. Better relative to opponent? Probably. But can this team go out there all of a sudden and score the most points? They've not scored 17 yet against an FBS opponent. If you have them scoring 21, that's over their team total. And if you have them scoring 21, which I don't know if I do, by the way. Like, I'm not sure Florida gets above 14 here. I don't know if I really have a reason to think they will get above 14 here. But there's a lot of love for the Gator defense. Love that I've agreed with. Love that led me to, again, you know, speaking, you know, playing the under when Florida played South Florida. And giving the Gators a shot when they went to, you know, South Beach and played the Canes. And ultimately couldn't get the job done. But this defense has been asked to do so much, right? And this defense, this might be the first time they don't have the better defense in a game. And I will add, I think most people would agree that Florida is going up against the best defense they've seen this season, right? Would anybody like to make a case that this is the best defense Texas has seen? I don't think so. I'm pretty sure Arch's start at Ohio State, the number one team in the country, the defending champs, the national favorite title, you know, the national champion title favorites, would be the more difficult start. And for Arch Manning, I think he's going to keep on getting better. Sam Houston is terrible. And their secondary is terrible. That team actually just played a night ago against New Mexico State and gave up 37. Opponent was 10 yards per pass, 9.8. Logan Fife. Is that former Fresno kid? Shout out me. Yes, it is. Sam Houston's terrible. But we needed to see Arch be great against someone terrible. He was great. 3 passing touchdowns to 3 incompletions, almost 15 yards per attempt, passer rating above 250, 2 rushing touchdowns added in. And then a bye week to really settle in. I think this is a Texas spot. I really disagree that this is a Florida spot. If Texas wasn't off a bye, maybe you get me there. If this was 7.5, I'm fine. I'm zagging. Arch props, something different. It's not. I have a 4.5, right? You can get 5.5. We need less than a touchdown victory to cover this number. Give me Texas on the road against the Gators as that Napier seat grows hotter and hotter. Now, I'm going to play these next 2 games together. I'm going to, you know, we'll break them down individually. But what I'm going to do for Alabama Vanderbilt and Florida State Miami is actually Bama Moneyline parlayed with Florida State plus 8.5. So, listen, with the 2-point conversions and different things, we could do this at 7.5, but at 8.5, I was fine to do it. Non-boosted around minus 113. You can always, you know, I say non-boosted because, like, DK has the 2 big game, use it however you want boost. You can take this parlay and use it like that. Where on, like, a FanDuel, they're only giving, they'll give you boost, but they're for singular games. I don't know if they're going to throw a Bama boost out there. They have already for the Florida State-Miami game, but you can't use that here. But my point is for the DK one, you can. We'll see what other books offer. But again, at minus 113, I'm fine. This is how I feel comfortable playing this game. because these numbers are just off from me being like, hey guys, I'm going to lay it with Bama, I'm going to take it with Florida State, and you know, I feel good about where we are. We'll actually start with Florida State, Miami. Opened 6.5. Again, I'm greedy with these numbers. I see that, I go, awesome. Let's get 7. No chance. Drops down to 4.5. Dropping down to 4. At time of recording, let's get a look here. Yeah, dropping down to 4. Loose 5 out there, okay? But that 7 wasn't coming. And I think Florida State's very live in this game. On the road, Carson Beck and this Miami offense, I don't think it's a sure thing. Okay? This team hasn't left home yet. They play Notre Dame in week 1, South Florida, Florida. You know, and they get these teams at times where the wins continue to look as good as possible. But they haven't left yet. So I think that's a little worrisome for the Canes. And for Florida State, while I know the defense, you know, the defensive performance against UVA is super frustrating, some of that is because Tommy Castellanos and the Florida State Seminoles offense didn't play clean football. FSU forced 3 turnovers, right? Now, again, they still allowed 440 yards of offense, but it was a wild day. But this FSU team can score. We know that. We all know that, right? And that was not just evident still in the battle with Virginia, as they scored 35 in regulation. That was the case when they scored 31 in this exact stadium against Alabama. So to me, to flip this up to 8.5, they're going to be in it the whole way, right? Whether that be backdoor, whether that be leading from in front. I think it's a great spot for FSU. But to get it over that number, I now feel amazing about it. I like them straight. If you're like, Kev, I don't want to do this. Yes, I lean FSU. But here's why I'm really excited to do it. All of my Alabama breakdowns are centered around the fact that I cannot picture any world where Alabama loses this game. Just can't. And I don't want to do a teaser. I don't want to do, you know what I mean? I don't need to do a 6-point teaser and take FSU up to 10 and take Bama down to 4.5. No. Just get me over the touchdown, right? Then a little bit, right, with Florida State. And just give me Bama to win this game. Because at first I look at this game and I'm like, okay, I'm going to play the under. Vandy's going to run it. They're going to bleed clock. And all of a sudden, it's a couple of Alabama stops away from this being really low scoring. But then you look at it and it's like, man, Vanderbilt's really efficient on the ground. And Bama's response is probably going to be to throw, and then throw again. Ty Simpson's props, 299.5. 2.5 passing touchdowns. That's Heisman stuff. Just expected for 303. Those are the expectations. This line, I thought it was going to be like 12.5. I don't say this to be like, oh, see how smart I am, okay? Because, you know, it's around it. But I'm not super surprised by it. But if this would have been able to get just down to a flat 10, I might have been saying to myself, look, let's just take the chance with Bama and hope it gets the job done. But it would have been scary because Pavi at Vanderbilt is just a money-making machine as a dog. A big dog at that here, over a touchdown. But again, at 9.5, I probably wouldn't have had a choice. Alabama, I understand, is coming off an emotional, awesome win on the road against Georgia. And last year, they were coming off an emotional, awesome at-home win against Georgia and then went to Vanderbilt, who nobody thought was going to have the season that they had. Bama is now home in a matchup between two top 16 teams. This is a statement spot for that defense. I have no doubts in my mind that Bama will be able to get 28 on the board. The Vanderbilt team totals 21.5. If you play it, I don't mind that. But the fact that I'm not confidently playing under that as somebody who was considering playing under, I knew that I was forcing a play that I didn't really want to make. I lean Bama. I lean under. I'm gonna bring these two big games together. Give me Bama money line, Florida State plus 8.5, and I think that's how we make our money here in this big spot. I mentioned the other possible big game, Notre Dame Boise State. I am betting this game. I do the big game best bets because I don't want to skip out on the big games, but Notre Dame Boise State spoke to me regardless. This is going to be one, though, that I don't think people will be super excited about. I'm playing under. You know, that under that I was just talking about in Bama Vandy, where it felt a little uncomfortable, but maybe it was the right thing to do. Time will tell. I think that's the case here with Notre Dame Boise. This Irish offense is fantastic. CJ Carr looks incredible. Jeremiah Love is a future first-round pick. Jadarian Price won't be selected likely too much later than that because he's actually just looked better than Love somehow this year. It's been incredibly impressive. But for Notre Dame, I think this game is a lot more about the ground than the air, and that will, of course, help shoot this clock down a little bit. Remember, Notre Dame went out there against Arkansas and threw for 354 yards just for Carr. A couple of trick plays. They ended up with 431 yards in 32 pass attempts as a team. But Notre Dame scoring 56 in that game, what was under-discussed is the fact they held Arkansas to 13. Arkansas is, I think, a better offense than Boise. I think Talon Green is better than Maddox Madsen. Now, Arkansas did have a much higher team total than that of Boise, but they didn't get close. They ended up in that game with 13 points, and Talon Green, through the air, had, for him, for how this season has started, I mean, that's just a down affair. First time he didn't throw a touchdown pass. His lowest yardage by a lot. Second worst completion percentage. Worst passer rating. Worst QBR. It was the worst game Talon Green had played. And that Notre Dame secondary is getting healthier. So for Boise, who looks like a throw-first team to me, I don't think that's great because Maddox Madsen has all of a sudden started to play a little bit better the last 3 weeks. Eastern Washington, come on. Air Force, ugh. App State, I don't care, man. I saw you against South Florida. The team scored 7. You were under 55% completions, and I'm unimpressed, and I don't trust Maddox Madsen. And I don't. Boise State didn't trust him last year in the playoff, and I don't think they're going to trust him here against Notre Dame, except they'll probably be down by a good bit and have but no choice. I think this is low scoring. I got this at 63.5, which feels it could be key because 42-21 is 63, but I think this is more 38-14, 38-17. Notre Dame rolls, another statement for Marcus Freeman's boys, clearly one of the 10 best teams in college football, who should of course be ranked over Penn State. There isn't an argument, by the way, for that. Let's just make that really clear. We're going to talk about, actually, I'm involved in the Penn State game. Penn State's played 4 games. They're 3-1. Notre Dame's played 4 games. They're 2-2. But the rankings are not standings. Otherwise, Notre Dame wouldn't be ranked. Penn State played 3 FCS teams. Not 3 bad teams. No. 3 fake teams is who Penn State played to start their season. And then literally had a bye before Oregon. Nevada's not FCS, but they might as well be. They're Mountain West. FIU, Villanova, FIU again might as well be FCS, but not power opponents. They looked unimpressive. Drew Aller was blech in all of those games. They took a bye and played Oregon. It's October. They haven't beaten a power opponent at Penn State. Oh, but Notre Dame's lost 2 games. Yeah, to Miami and Texas A&M, who are both ranked in the top 6 by a combined 4 points. They've played two power teams since then and scored 102 on them. Don't, man. I'm telling you. I'm telling you right now. And nobody, here's the best part of it. Nobody thinks Penn State's better than Notre Dame. You can't. You can't. Because Notre Dame's a really good team, which means Penn State can't beat them. Check last year's semifinal tape. Give me under 63.5. Notre Dame, Boise. Let's just jump over then to this UCLA-Penn State game. Love the over here. Whoa! Zagged on him. I know I was just speaking poorly about Drew Aller. Drew Aller's like only impressive performance, arguably, in his career. I do not care about him getting up a bunch of numbers in a game that they got destroyed in against Oregon in the Big Ten title game. Was last year on the road against USC. So I'm fine with UCLA's offense going out west and playing. I am fine with Penn State's offense going out west against UCLA, where they should be aiming to clear the total by themselves. This number is 48.5. If the opportunity is there, this is a terrible, terrible UCLA football team. Awful. If the opportunity is there, Penn State should push for 50. Utah scored 43. UNLV scored 30. New Mexico scored 35. You might say, why are you not just playing a Penn State team total then? The UCLA team total is the 12.5. And for Nico at home in a big spot, this is the kind of game where you got to make a little bit of noise. This feels like one of those games where UCLA's opening possession, they get a touchdown and they don't score again until their final possession. But that might be good enough for us. In a 48-14 final. But that is all on the board here. It's funny, but this worked out for me. I saw this at 27.5, which is where it was. I'm like, man, if people just keep betting Penn State, we get 28 and a hook. I might have to trust UCLA on the number. This goes down the other direction. Don't have to bet UCLA. Don't need to trust a Nico individual team total or an Aller individual team total. Give me over 48.5 in what should be a big, big scoring affair. Two more games, two more dogs, and then that's it, all right? So that's where the card is going to be. One of them's in, the other I'm waiting, just being a little greedy. That's Georgia-Kentucky. I'm taking Kentucky plus the points. Now, we are in the market right now. 119.5, 219.5, a couple of 20s, and some 20.5. Now, I will be very disappointed if I miss out on 20.5 and this goes down to 19.5 everywhere. And based on where the market is sitting right now, that seems to be more likely. It seems to be more likely than us getting 21. But I'm going to sit and wait and see if we can catch the 21. I like it at 20.5. I'm almost definitely will still play it at 19.5. Hopefully I would be able to at least get the flat 20. You know, if I start to see it all fading off the board, you guys can balance this how you'd like, but I'm going to try and be greedy here and see if we can clip a 21 with Georgia, Kentucky. Kirby doesn't cover as a big favorite. This is all narrative. Oh, he's going to be so upset. Because they lost. Yeah, last year he was so upset. They lost to Bama. They were at home against Auburn and didn't cover. Laying 21.5. They won the game 31-13. That's an 18-point win. I think this Cutter Boyle, freshman quarterback for UK, might have a little bit of something here. He had a decent little backup run against Texas, actually, last season. And they were in this game. Last week against South Carolina, they were winning after the first quarter, and then it was back-to-back possessions of scoop and score pick six. You know, South Carolina was able to get downhill on them after that. It happens. Kirby's uninterested in. If Kirby cared about running it up, we would see that. He just doesn't. And for Kirby, there are much bigger games on deck. You got to realize something, okay? Georgia's played four games. Marshall and Austin Peay, who cares and who cares less? They are more than lucky to have escaped Tennessee with a win. And then Bama was just better than them. And that was at home off a bye. if Georgia was 2-2 right now, where would they be ranked? Because they don't actually then sit there with anything to hang their hat on. And here's what awaits Georgia after this Kentucky game. At Auburn, home against Ole Miss, Florida, at Mississippi State, home against Texas, the Charlotte rollover, and then a neutral site Georgia Tech game. So there are tough games still here on this dog schedule, and how much leeway do we have? You know, I think most people would say 10-2 Georgia's getting in, right? Most people would say that. It depends how the rest of the country does. When does that loss happen? And let's say they lose one game and then they're 9-2 going into Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech gave him a scare, and that's going to be a lot of pressure because that will probably be for your spot in the CFP. Like, you will, that'll probably determine whether you get in or not for the Dogs. So this is a team who, their job against Kentucky's win. They're not in the style points game yet. I think that number's okay, at 21, I think it is too tall, and that's why I'm hoping we get there. At 20.5, I think it's enough to play Kentucky in a game that lands 17, where you see a final score that might be 28-10. I know that's not 17-18, but you get my point. I think we can get something like that, where we end up running out of here with a Georgia cover. The other one, oh boy. UNC Clemson. Clemson was a 13.5 point favorite, and this kicked up to 14, and then in one spot through the hook. And at 14.5, I'm playing Bill Belichick. I think this is one of the most important games for Bill Belichick at North Carolina this season. The most important game he played was against TCU. They beat Charlotte and Richmond like they were supposed to. If they were able to knock off UCF, that would have been nice for them, right? But they weren't. But why this Clemson game matters so much for Bill Belichick is it is off a bye, so you get to kind of reset your program, see what works, what doesn't, and you would think use all of that coaching experience to your advantage. Dabo's not been great off bye recently. So Clemson being off a bye doesn't concern me as much, right? And I don't know how much Clemson is really going to come out of the break looking to change. Clemson is supposed to be able to win on talent, and they just can't right now. North Carolina may throw a completely different quarterback at Clemson. And for UNC, really, you know, at this point, what would be a great year? Get to bowl eligibility. I don't think they win against Clemson, though. I mean, at this point, why not? But at 14.5, hang here. You're on bye again. Hang here. Settle in. Tell your guys, hey, that's top of the class, even though it's not, but say it is. And then get ready for Cal. Get ready for UVA. Get ready for try and make some noise down the stretch. Bill Belichick off bye. That's what I want. That's what I want to trust in. The great coach is still in there somewhere. This is the spot where it should show up. So that's the college football card, okay? We're going to lay 4.5 with Texas. We're going to go under 63.5 Notre Dame, Boise State. We're going to take the points with Kentucky, hoping to get 21. Might have to just be 20.5 or 20. We're going to take 14.5 with UNC. Over the 48.5, UCLA, Penn State, and then a best bet parlay in the big games of Bama Moneyline and Florida State plus 8.5. Let's do a quick break. Couple of things to watch this weekend in the NFL. We'll get you out of here on the Kevin Walsh Show. All right, let's get a little NFL thoughts on the board before the weekend. We'll see what holds true. What do we need to be watching? And it's very clear to me that the Eagles are in the eye line of everyone, and rightfully so. They're the defending Super Bowl champions. Philly, though, is being discussed similarly to last year's Chiefs, right? We all hear these comparisons. But unfortunately, I think people are leaning on that. They are leaning on the last year's Chiefs comparison somewhat inaccurately. First of all, last year's Chiefs were actually given grace by mostly everyone. They were consistently picked to be great, to win games. And it was more just like, hey, do you think Mahomes is going to play like himself stuff? And then people on the KC side would be like, what do you mean? He doesn't need to play like himself. He doesn't care. He's not trying. Everything's great. Or he's actually been so good. Or what do you want him to do? Or I'll talk to you in January. And it was just, okay. Sure. Right? But, and again, like this stuff started with Philly in game one. Game number one, people were like, AJ Brown? Not a lot, huh? Thoughts? And it's been going on all year. We're 4 weeks in. The Eagles are 4-0. I'm not a hypocrite, though, because I was someone last year who I think was speaking loudly and directly about the Chiefs' flaws. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you that the Eagles right now look like world beaters. That'd be ridiculous. That would be ridiculous. But I heard someone today mention, like, I think Philly's probably still power rated like a top three team in the league, and I don't agree with that. What? Pardon? What are we talking about? The Philadelphia Eagles right now are struggling with consistency massively. But the Philadelphia Eagles have flashed greatness in all three phases. Special teams, I don't need to make the case. And defensively, I don't need to make the case. It is offensively, though, where everyone is talking about the two halves of Eagle football that have been completely unacceptable. And they have been completely unacceptable. The first half against the Rams and the second half against the Bucs. But here's the thing. Does nobody have any interest in talking about the other two halves of football? Do those halves of football mean nothing to anyone? Again, the Eagles have played two of the worst offensive halves of football of the entire year. And yet, won both games with 30 points scored. Now, you might say special teams had a touchdown in both of those games. Okay, that's fine. That's fine. That means the Eagles, still though, are having multi-touchdown performances in these other halves. The second half that Jalen Hurts had against the Rams was brilliant and should have answered mostly any question. The takeaway for everyone was, well, why didn't they do it sooner? I'm not saying that that isn't a fair question, and I'm not saying there isn't some level of interest there. I don't know how that's more relevant, though, than Jalen Hurts snapping his finger, turning it on, and lighting up the LA Rams. Then we get to the game against Tampa Bay. Jalen Hurts' first half stats are very easy to be familiar with because everybody knows what the second half stats were. In the first half, Jalen Hurts, 15 for 16, 130 yards, two passing touchdowns. He was incredible. The Eagles scored 24 in the first half. Again, I understand the block, you know, punt, but the way the Eagles' offense came out of the gates, there's no reason to think they weren't going to have a big offensive first half. Right? The first offensive touchdown was a 73-yard drive. And the second was a 67-yard drive. So, I think it is absolutely right to be watching these Eagle games and figuring out why is the consistency dropping off on the offensive side of the football. But I also think it is important to acknowledge, wait a minute, how are they winning these games, right? How are they even, at minimum, how about this? How are they in the game? right? If the offense is as bad as everybody's discussing, why are they not getting destroyed? It's because the offense right now, for two consecutive games, has had an F-minus half and an A-plus half. Last year's Chiefs played C football, B-minus football, just throughout the whole game. And then they'd, find a way at the end, whether that be a missed field goal, a fumble, a DPI, a holding call. Like, that's what was happening in those games. That's not what's happening for the Eagles right now. The Eagles play a half of F-minus football and A-plus football. But people are speaking like they just play F football the whole game, and then the scorekeeper's like, give him 31. And then they hand him the win. That's not what's going on. I'm sure many fans feel that the conversation around their teams are frustrating. But, and yes, I'm an Eagle fan, so maybe there's some of that. But also, but don't forget, most unbiased fan history of sports media. Let's not be crazy now, all right? But I don't think it's wrong to wonder why Jalen Hurts having a 3 passing touchdown half against the Rams in an incredible comeback between, at the time, was 2-0 teams, rematch of the divisional round. I think it is absolutely reasonable for me to wonder why the takeaway was 80-20, 20%, wow, he was really good, 80%, what is going on? That feels imbalanced. I don't think the takeaway from a perfect first half of football from Jalen Hurts and legitimately didn't complete a pass in the second half, I don't think the balance on that should be 100-0. Because that's what it is. I was going to do 95-5. It literally, show me the 5%. Who out there broke down the 5% the first half? You know what? I think Sheil Kapadia did. So what do we want to call it? 95-5. Nobody's interested? The story of the Eagles is not the passing game is terrible. The story of the Eagles right now is they have no consistency, and their star wide receiver is letting it be known again that he's unhappy with the results, and he's saying it's because he's trying to get the team going. But does anyone think A.J. Brown was having a good time in the first half when Hurts was 15 of 16 with multiple passing touchdowns, but A.J. Brown was doing nothing? I doubt it. They're a fascinating team. They're a fun discussion. But the discussion right now, unsurprisingly, is missing the mark a little. So they go into a game now against Denver as the Eagles' gauntlet of a schedule continues, one of the best defenses in the league. And people think the priority is supposed to be what? Get it to A.J. Brown? You know what's crazy? The Eagles actually have a much bigger problem right now than A.J. Brown getting the ball. Their offense, come on, you have superstar wide receivers, really good tight end, superstar running back, that offensive line. Look, I love the offensive line. They're not playing that well. And Lane Johnson keeps leaving games in early. Does anyone have a question for Saquon Barkley and his 3.1 yards per carry? His 19 for 43 performance against the Bucs at 2.3 yards a carry? His consecutive weeks of under 3 yards a carry? Home run hitter Saquon's got to make something happen. His long run this year is 16. Saquon Barkley had 3 games all season. if you include the Super Bowl four, but that's now like a 20-game sample size without a run of 17 or more. He's matched that through 4 weeks. Again, it's like the low-hanging fruit. It's like, wait, can we make everything about Jalen Hurts isn't that good, even though they're 4-0 and he's played two unbelievable halves of football? Sick. Let's do it. Let's do it. Is that not what's going on? The media typically hates the diva wide receiver. People are tripping over themselves. Be like, I kind of see where A.J. Brown's coming from. That's new. And there's nuance, and we can have those conversations. But that's new. It's fascinating. And the Eagles game against Denver is going to be fascinating. But it almost feels like the biggest lock is going to be the conversation that comes out of the game is going to be misguided. Because that's what we are seeing so frequently here with Philadelphia. The offensive line's not playing well. Saquon hasn't hit a home. Saquon hasn't hit a double yet, much less a home run. AJ Brown is frustrated. There's a lot of interesting things here going on. New offensive coordinator, right? But here are the two things I know. The Eagles should be power rated over every single team in the league. And there's a lot more going on than should we blame it all on Jalen Hurts. I think that's fair to say. The Eagles, after playing Denver, are going to play the Giants. And I can't wait to see what the chatter will be in that game if it's a 2-0 Jackson Dart. Jackson Dart's got a real opportunity here with the upset victory that the Giants pulled off against the Chargers. They are dogs in the game against the Saints. I don't know if that's going to be a side I'm betting. I do know that every quarterback that has played the Saints has thrown multiple passing touchdowns. This should be a gaudy Jackson Dart game. They played very safe football, the Giants, against the Chargers. Jackson Dart had one touchdown pass, one rushing touchdown. He should be accounting for two more touchdowns in this game. And if the Giants get a win, while people will say, why did Russ start the first 3 weeks? I don't think that needs to be the conversation. If the Giants get a win, they're an upset away within one of their next three games from feeling in the mix. That's what the Giants, that's the opportunity for Jackson Dart. And I actually, now listen, for Giants fans, if you said, hey, would you rather Jackson Dart is absolutely wonderful, but you lose, or Jackson Dart is blech, but you win, you would take the win. Stack W's, let the confidence come for the youngster. But if you get a monster Jackson Dart game, even a really good Jackson Dart game, right? So just 250 and two adds on the ground. Call it 260 total yards and, you know, two. Maybe three total touchdowns. That swagger that made me believe in the Giants coming into the year, that swagger is going to be back. AFC North teams, with quarterback worries. Baltimore is not going to have Lamar Jackson for Sunday. I think it's on the board he misses their next game. The games are against the Texans and the Rams. The Texans have one of the best defenses in football. The Rams have a very good defense, and the Rams will be coming off of a mini bye where they'll be very focused and frustrated because they just lost to the Niners. And if Lamar misses those games, the Ravens' best-case scenario is 1-1. They will be favored to lose both because they are favored to lose to the Texans, so they would definitely be underdogs to the Rams. Definitely would be underdogs to the Rams. I think Lamar is playing in week 8 no matter what against the Chicago Bears. They have a week 7 bye. All I am saying is the Baltimore Ravens, if they lose their next two games, will need a miraculous run. Miraculous. To make the playoffs. And even more miraculous to win the division. That is certainly a stock up for Pittsburgh. But Cincinnati, I beg you once more, do not throw the season away. Either rule Burrow out for the year or get a real quarterback. After the win against Jacksonville, but in the game that Burrow was injured, as somebody who bet Cincinnati to win the Super Bowl, I said, You have to go out and get someone real. Because when Jake Browning comes in and throws three picks in that game, you know it's going to be trouble. And from that moment on, they have lost 76-13 their last two games. And it's not all the defense. The offense can't sustain drives. The offense was creating touchdown after touchdown after touchdown, okay, in that football game for the Minnesota Vikings. I'm like, the defense can be okay. The offense has talent. You cannot pay Chase and Higgins and have them out there with Jake Browning for a full season. There are multiple Giants quarterbacks you can bring in. You, whether that be Russell Wilson or Jameis Winston, Kirk Cousins, heck, Tyrod Taylor, Tanner McKee, Gardner Minshew, Mitchell Trubisky, Kenny Pickett. Get a real quarterback. Because 2-2 feels awful. Their next two games are the Lions and the Packers. They'll probably be 2-4. Probably. But you will pick your head up after that and be home against Pittsburgh, home against the Jets, home against the Bears, bye week. Get a real quarterback in by the time you are playing Pittsburgh. And give yourself a chance. Because it is on the board, Cincinnati, that you lose to the Lions and Packers and look down on the Ravens in the division. Get a real quarterback. That is the Kevin Walsh Show. What a delight to have you here as we get ready for a big time weekend in the sports world. We'll be back next week working on getting Sam and Joe in the mix with us here. Getting right back to that multiple times a week schedule. Appreciate it. Rate, review, subscribe, all the good stuff that you can do anywhere you get those podcasts. I'm Kevin Walsh. This is the Kevin Walsh Show, a Sports Grid podcast. We'll see you next.